Duncan, State Director of AARP Connecticut for a while. Ms. Duncan, good morning.
Morning.
How are you surviving all this?
I am surviving well, guys. Thank you very much. How are you?
Well, we think this working separated is going to work for us. It may mean for a longer-term relationship.
It's so a trial separation, but it's working well.
Yeah, it's 112
it's sort of like
days.
The opposite of what happens at home when you're all stuck in the house together.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You got it, Nora. You know the way we operate. So,
yeah.
We're hearing about special session coming up, or special sessions, and I know there's a couple of things that AARP is interested in, of which there's some controversy. One is absentee balloting. Can you talk about your position on that?
Yeah, please.
I sure can. So that's the one thing they will cover in the upcoming special session, whenever that is. We are very interested in passing for the general election in November an absentee balloting bill that looks exactly like the Executive Order 7QQ that the governor signed to change the rules for the August primary. And so what that means is that, for the primary, every registered Democrat, registered Republican voter received in the mail, or will receive in the mail very shortly, an application for an absentee ballot. So it's a two-part process. But the thing that's great about it is that concerns about the pandemic are a excused absentee. So if you have, even if you're younger and not in your healthy yourself, but maybe you live with someone who is in a higher risk category, and you're concerned about picking up COVID at the polls, you can apply for an absentee ballot, receive that in the mail, fill it out, and return it. For the regular election in November, that would be every registered voter. In a primary here in Connecticut, you only get to vote in a primary if you're with a party, unlike the general election. So we want it to mirror 7QQ, and I think there's a good chance of that happening, although there's some controversy around it. That's our position, because we need to keep everybody safe, and we need to not keep anybody from the polls for any reason. So we need everyone to be able to vote safely.
Nora, I mean, at this point, and I think I voted absentee the last primaries is a while ago, 4 years ago, I guess, huh? And, you know, what you did is you downloaded a form off the website and then just sent it in. Then you got your ballot, and that was that. Or you could go into town hall, whatever you wanted to do. This would be a little different than that, Nora?
You can still do that download. The difference is that because there was money coming in from the federal government regarding voting and elections, we were able to mail people the absentee ballot application and a postage paid envelope. But the old-fashioned way still does work. And the ballots become available on July 21, and you can for the primary, and they can be returned in mail or in person, or you can drop in a new tamper-proof drop box that each municipality has. But there's some enhancements to the mechanism by which you get your information and your ballot because of the money that's coming from the federal government.
Now, isn't there some dispute about the validity of absentee ballots from a higher source?
There's definitely some controversy. It doesn't appear to be based in a lot of evidence. But yes, there is controversy about absentee balloting. But, you know, we're way behind the rest of the country in absentee balloting and early voting. And I think that has a lot more to do with, ginning up controversy than it does with the actual reality. And you know what? We have shut down the state. We have gone to extremes. And when the most important thing in our democracy is the ability to exercise your vote safely and fairly, then we need to make accommodations that meet the current time that we're in.
Talking with Nora Duncan, State Director of AARP Connecticut. I wanted to get on right to the next topic.
Yeah, please.
Which was allowing residents in nursing homes to have cameras in their rooms. Why wouldn't they allow them to do that in the first place?
Really?
You know, that's a great question, because you're allowed to have one to watch for deliveries at your house, to keep an eye on your nanny, and to have a conversation with your pet when you're at work. So I don't seems like it would be a right that people who choose to live in a nursing home would also have, like we have in our homes when we live unassisted, or even with assistance, maybe from a home care staff person. So this is a issue that we've had objection from in the past from both nursing home union leadership and nursing home owners. And so the issues to me have more to do with concerns about gotcha, and that's not what we're about with this. I think it's fair to say that we've been working on this for a couple of years. I think if we could all, look back, it would seem that we could have avoided some of the things that have shown up due to COVID-19 if people had been allowed to have cameras. And these are two-way cameras, so you can communicate with your loved one if those had been allowed to be in people's rooms. I mean, right now we're in a position where people have not physically been inside a nursing home to see a family member. They may have visited outside and they may have had a virtual visit, but they haven't been inside the room since March.
Nora, there's some video that has circulated a number of times of basically nursing home patients, whatever, residents, being abused by staff. Is that the problem? Yeah. Is that part of the problem here?
I mean, it certainly is a problem, but it's definitely not a problem. It's not, people aren't being abused in a widespread way. Sometimes, your roommate might be abusing you, too. That's an issue. But this is an issue for us that has a lot more to do with patients' rights and family rights. Even think about it, too. Like, if you maybe say your mom was living in Florida and she went into a nursing home and you're living here, having that ability to have that two-way communication at, the push of a button is really important. But it's also important for abuse and neglect. Those are real problems. And that's what what shows up in the Washington Post and, and in places where, in videos that circulate on the internet. So, of course, that's an issue, but it's by no means the only issue, because there's plenty of people who just want to be able to have this right like they do everywhere else. And our position is that if we can do this safely, responsibly, with full consent and full transparency, there's absolutely no reason why we shouldn't be taking this up in a special session. This special session, of all things, should be including nursing homes. And I know there's talk of a September special session, and frankly, we're not really willing to wait until a September special session. And the state's long-term care ombudsman has amazing substitute language for a bill that actually passed the aging committee in March. So this isn't something that has not been debated. It's been debated for a few years. And it also, I will just note, it covers releasing facilities from liability, from breach of privacy. So, the objections to me are not founded, and I'll be honest with you guys, the administration says it's complicated, and legislators have said to me it's complicated. And my answer is, okay, your job is complicated. This is complicated. Figure it out. We've got smart policymakers and amazing language from the state's advocate for nursing home residents and families. So we can do this. It's just about will.
Nora, hopefully this all gets done. We appreciate your time. Stay safe.
Bye.
We'll talk again soon.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
All right. Nora Duncan from AARP.